Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Made a tweet right now. It says breaks are more powerful than we realize. Even a 1 to 2 minute micro break can restore focus and boost mood. Does anyone feel better after our 1 to 2 minute micro break? Woodsy's not even done with his break. He's still putting on his cleats.
Yeah, we just had to change.
Shoes for the upcoming game, so getting dressed. Because you had to wear your white unis for the pictures, and now you're into your brown unis for the games.
Yeah.
I mean, will this never stop for you two?
Somebody's got to do it, though.
It's the labor of love.
I will say these sand uniforms are by far my favorite in 6 years of fantasy camp.
I didn't think I would like the sand. I absolutely love the sand.
Well, I think it's slimming. The sand color, the vertical pinstripes. I think all the fantasy campers look a little bit better in these sand colored jerseys.
Yes. Love it. I love the way they look. I love the way they feel.
Good.
Yeah, they do.
They feel really good.
You feel good playing in them.
All right.
I think I'm ready.
All right. Underway at the Farmers Insurance Open now. Just getting started. First round of the Farmers Insurance Open.
We're going to do this after we left.
Yeah, this was like post Pauly and Woodsy, right?
Well, I've got Don't Do This coming up at 9:20.
Okay. That makes sense.
And then maybe a little bit more. I wasn't going to talk about the Farmers, though. I actually was going to talk about tonight's game at Air Force, SDSU. And I wanted to point out,
what's the line on that game?
I think it was 9, maybe?
We talked about
it.
San Diego State, they don't lose
two in a row. Yeah.
They don't. It's better when they're at home on the second one. They're not at home. But when they lost to UNLV, I pointed out that San Diego State has pushed themselves kind of close to the bubble. And I had some people pushing back going, I mean, yeah, it wasn't a good loss, but they're not on the bubble for the NCAA tournament. So some new brackets came out yesterday. Like Andy Katz has them as one of the last four teams in the play-in game as an 11 seed already after just the one stumble, basically, to UNLV. Lunardi has them just outside, like the first team that's not in the playoff, the play-in game as a 10 seed. Ooh. So there really is no more margin for error.
No,
a loss doesn't put you on the bubble. A loss puts you now probably on the wrong side of the bubble for San Diego State. So they've used up all of their goodwill, you know, the win over Houston, the win over Creighton, and the road win at Boise State, and one loss at home to UNLV has now basically sapped all of that out, and they now have to play, you know, not perfect basketball, but they can't be losing games they're supposed to win going forward, starting tonight at Air Force, clearly.
Yeah, it'd be a real bummer, man, to get to have that early season success and end up where, you know, you don't even want to throw it out in the atmosphere of what could happen. That's a team that's talented enough to, of course, be one of the last 64 teams, and they have to. They have to find a way to get it done. They have to. I mean, they're too talented not to. And, again, you know, early season success, we all kind of thought they had it. Oh, okay, they're gonna figure this out and get even better. But man, they've had some really, really tough ones.
I do think that we've gotten a little spoiled. Obviously, I mean, teams don't make the NCAA tournament every single year.
Yes, they should.
Even North Carolina and Kentucky occasionally miss the NCAA tournament. The only team that makes it every year is Gonzaga, and part of it is because of the conference they play in. They're a really great program, obviously, but they don't have any setbacks. You know, they have pretty much gamed the system where they get there every single year. But there's going to be a down season every once in a while for every program. You can't expect to reload every single year and just be right where you left off. It was amazing how well this young team started out.
That's the thing is you started out well. You want some big games early, and it gets that hope up of we're going to cruise to the tournament. Now there's no cruising right now for the Aztecs, and they got to win this game tonight.
But that's not an indictment on Brian Dutcher or the program or anything like that. It's a normal. This is a normal process for a younger team that's going to have some highs and some lows. Last couple of weeks, we've just seen a couple of the lows. And hopefully, you know, you trust that Brian Dutcher figures things out. You see what they did in practice? I thought this was interesting. So, I don't know if you remember the UNLV game. They started by shooting, the first 10 shots were all three-pointers, and they only made one of them, or first 9. And a couple of them were, like, NBA range threes. And Dutch is like, I mean, occasionally you're going to need to shoot one of those, especially you're getting down, you know, 5 seconds on the shot clock. That might be the best shot you got. It's a long three. We make some of them sometimes. It's fine. You don't want to shoot those with 23 seconds left on the shot clock. You want to try to work your way for a better shot. And Dutch goes, you know, I could show them in film, or we could make it a little more memorable. So he actually blew up giant, like posters of the guys, how far they were shooting with the shot clock going. And they put them up at practice in their practice gym, the what is it called?
Doesn't matter.
I can't remember. What's
Peterson
the
Gym?
No, the Jam Center. And, like, posted them out and go,
this is where you were.
This is where you were when you shot a three-pointer with, like, 18 seconds left on the shot clock. We're not going to be doing that going forward. So
kids need visuals. That's one thing I've learned as a father. The visual explanation is always better than your words.
So my guess is one thing you won't see tonight at Air Force are early threes jacked deep up from 6 feet beyond the three-point line.
I say for kids, but for everyone. I mean, if you could say, hey, buddy, this was your follow-through on your golf swing. This is what it looked like. I have it on video. You're like, oh, yeah, that's absolutely terrible. I take video of Bo hitting off the tee. I'm like, you're dragging. He's like, I don't know what that means. You show him, see your arm, look where it is. He's like, oh, okay.
Oh.
That's real. I mean, that's good. That's good from Dutch. It probably lightens the mood a little bit, too, when they walk out there and they see all of these dummies in their terrible spots.
And remember, you know, Dutch has to make do, you know, with guy like Lamont Butler is having a great season for Kentucky this year. How about Chad Baker Mazar? Remember him?
I do.
Spent a season in the San Diego State program. Grades weren't great. Ended up transferring to a JC. He's now one of the best players on the number one team in the country, Auburn, and helping the Tigers. They are the unanimous number one team in the country this week. And Chad Baker Mazar, who started at San Diego State, is one of their key contributors and starters on the team. You know, so these are guys that Dutch recruited and developed and have gone on to success elsewhere. And, you know, Dutch has to just keep
restocking. And that's awesome.
Restocking.
If you miss the tournament, no one's going to say, but, hey, at least some guys that used to be in our program are having really great success on
people
elite teams.
People will say that. Somebody I know. So, hey, well, look at not a total loss for Dutch. He's got Lamont Butler.
We can hang that banner in Viejas Arena.
Chad Baker Mazar, and they're starring in the tournament.
I mean, in the old days, you'd look at this San Diego State team with, you know, three freshmen and three sophomores all playing key roles.
Yeah.
And you'd go, if you make the tournament this year, it's gravy. You get there, it's a little extra experience, but wait until next year. And then the year after, when these guys are all seniors and juniors.
Doesn't happen anymore.
You're going to be a top four team. I mean, you're going to be a Final Four contender, but
that doesn't
happen.
Does
anyone expect all of the, you know, Miles Byrd, B.J. Davis, Magoon Gua, Farrell Compton,
they're all
Taj DeGorville, all going to be here for the next three seasons?
No. You can almost guarantee
whether
it's
they
not.
Go to the NBA, they transfer for NIL money. You know, you'll be lucky if one or two of those guys are still here in 2 years. You know, hopefully a few of them at least come back next year, but the odds that a majority of them are back in 2 years, probably very small at this point.
Yeah, such as college. Well, there's Terry Kennedy. He wants to change the rules again. All right.
Sign a contract.
Okay, college kids sign a contract.
No, they're getting a scholarship, sign a contract. But what about the coaches who then leave? You know, they sign a contract, and then they get a better one, and they're gone after a year.
Happens all the time.
You let kids out of the their scholarship after the coach leaves and goes for a bigger deal somewhere else. TK?
by the way, Terry Kennedy and I have made peace.
Oh, good.
We have made peace.
That.
We have.
Because last year,
I don't know how we got off to the wrong foot last year, but for the audience, you know, bring it in. Bring it in for the real.
So last year, if you'll remember, at Fantasy Camp, Terry Kennedy actually traded Woods.
Yep.
It was the first ever trade in the history of Padres Fantasy Camp, and you just needed something to shake up your roster. I think.
I guess.
You know, things weren't going great. Sometimes you shake up your roster. You make a move.
The guy they traded for me, Josh, first play of the first game, he popped his hammy. He was
in right field. They hit one down the line, and he was running after it. He took about two steps, pop, hit the ground. He was done the rest of the week.
I was shook, though. I mean, I think I K'd like three times. I was shook when I got traded. I didn't like it. I didn't want to make history. And no trades so far this year.
Gives you some perspective for the guys who have to deal with it in real life. and you know, figure out how to uproot their families and go to a different city.
Can you imagine? All I had to do was change. Traded. I didn't have to change locker. Yeah. I just go to a different field. It was, there's one thing that
it gets in your head, though.
There's one thing that fantasy camp does give you, and it's perspective. And Hoffy, everyone knows the story of Hoffy heckling me a few years ago. Couldn't throw a strike, and then when I walked off the mound, he goes, "Now do that in front of 40,000 people." And I go, he goes, "Next time you guys want to rip a player, remember that feeling." And I was like, "Why did you make me feel this way, Hoffy? I didn't want to feel this way." But yeah, I mean, the work these guys put in. We've talked to the trainers a bunch about just what it takes to get these dudes on the field sometimes, and it is just it's insane to think about the travel, all of that. So it gives you a little bit of perspective out here when you want to get on and go, these guys aren't focused, they're not running hard, they're not doing this, they're not doing that. It is just a shock to the system.
And obviously most people aren't going to be lucky enough to get to experience fantasy camp, but you know, if you're listening, hopefully we can convey some of that. And you know what, sometimes professional athletes are due some criticism. Most of them realize it's part of the gig. Sometimes it's taking a little bit of grief from fans, you know, taking some heckling. If you're on the road, you certainly...
Yeah, you know it's coming.
You know it's coming. I think it's when it comes from your home fans is when I think it's the hardest for players, because then you feel like you're letting someone down. If you're getting heckled on the road, you probably feel kind of good about it.
Like, yeah, they know who you are.
They know who I am. I'm a thorn in their side. They're mad at me, so they're heckling. You're like, you don't have a problem with that at all. It's when it comes from your own fans, because you feel like, oh, I'm disappointing these people. You know, they're paying to come see me, and for whatever reason, we're not winning enough, and they're not happy with us. They're not happy with my performance. That's got to eat at you a little bit.
No doubt. No question about it. All right, we're going to get out of here.
Yeah. So I'll do our Don't Do This segment. When we come back, we may bring back one of our conversations from – had some great guests on earlier
fun
today here at Fantasy Camp. It's really been a fun second morning. We are here all week, so we'll get to Don't Do This coming up next. I'll talk a little bit more about who is that one guy that did not vote for Ichiro. For the Hall of Fame. Coming up, First Woods.
California sports fan, good news. Underdog available to play in our state. The best place to cash in on all your takes during the playoffs. Which players will go off? Which players are going to be ice cold? It's tough picking out there for sure. But listen, with Underdog, you're going to have a lot of fun when you play. And you guys know how this works, right? They're going to go higher, or they're going to go lower. And you pick it, and every dog deserves a second chance. With Underdog Rescues, you can get your money back, receive a promo. If an early injury causes your entry to lose, I've done that before. Picked a guy, gets hurt, second play of the game, and you know, I'm out of it. I'm not winning anything at this point. But again, Underdog, having a blast with it. And I've heard from some tier ones out there that have signed up, use the promo code Woods. I really, really appreciate that, number one. Number two, have fun with it, be responsible with it, but it is the best place to play pick 'em. Download the Underdog app, sign up with the promo code Woods, deposit now to get up to $1,000 in bonus cash instantly. Again, use the promo code Woods when you sign up. Must be 18 and over, present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms do apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
but somehow was left off of one single solitary ballot. 394 ballots, 393 votes. And because of that, he fails to join Mariano Rivera as the only players ever unanimously elected to the Hall of Fame. Now, it's already ridiculous that there's only one. And it was ridiculous before Mariano that there wasn't anyone inducted into the Hall of Fame. We still, as far as I know, have not learned the identity of the Baseball Writers Association of America voter who did not vote for Ichiro, or any reasons why that may have happened. I mean, there's speculation, obviously, mostly centered around some numbskull is looking for attention, and that's why they didn't vote for Ichiro. You know, they're going to say, I don't vote for anyone on the first ballot. No one deserves to get in on the first ballot unless you're the greatest player of all time. Whatever it is, 393 other people agreed on this, Frank. It does seem very weird that there was just the one that did not.
And if it is just somebody looking for some notoriety, you should have your vote stripped. I'm sorry, you should not be able to vote. If you're going to play games like that, you should have your vote stripped. That you should not be allowed to vote for it.
Well, I tend to think so as well. I mean, was it simply a clerical error? Like someone checked the wrong box, you know, and looked
That's
like
understandable.
Ichiro was the one next to him? That's understandable, but then the don't do this would be on the Baseball Writers Association. Hey, how about something where there's like a double check? They're still going with the old mail it out and put a check mark in process for this. There's not a way to, you know, confirm. And I also have heard the calls of people who go, well, this should be everybody's ballot should be made public at the end yes. of the process. And while I am sympathetic to that, I do also realize that sometimes you do have to make an unpopular choice. And, you know, if you really believe someone doesn't belong, you don't want to feel like shamed into voting for someone you didn't believe in because, you know, your vote's going to be public at the end. Do you think you get a more honest ballot from writers? Not for Ichiro necessarily, but, you know, more, you know, 50-50 candidates knowing that, hey, I'm going to get so much grief if I leave this guy off. I'm just going to vote yes because I don't want to get all the Twitter trolls and, you know, everyone coming after me. You don't necessarily want that either.
If you can back up, like I would say Mike Mussina, while he was good, I mean, he wasn't, when I think of Hall of Fame, I think of standout player in your generation. I didn't see Mike Mussina as that. So I wouldn't have thought that he would have gotten in. If you can back up why you didn't vote for somebody with like an actual argument instead of, oh, I was just looking for attention. Yeah, then fine. Then that's okay. I can understand that. But if you're just doing it to get attention, I'm sorry. You should not be allowed to have the power to vote for somebody to be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, if someone's doing it for attention, they're doing a lousy job because they haven't made themselves public. So
exactly.
You don't get any attention until you announce who you are. Maybe they have some second thoughts, like, I didn't think I'd be the only one. This is bad. So we'll see if there's anyone steps up and has the gumption to admit to it. I thought it was funny. Our friend Adam Jones tweeted out kind of jokingly. He got three votes, so you know, his first year on the ballot, he doesn't carry over to year number two, and he was never expecting to, but he goes, I don't know, I think one of those three came from the person who didn't vote for Ichiro for the Hall of Fame. So Adam having some lighthearted fun with that. All right, story number two for Don't Do This comes from the National Hockey League last night. Just saw this story. I've seen all kinds of excuses in sports. This is a new one for me. Washington Capitals goalie Logan Thompson says he allowed a goal last night to Corey Perry of the Edmonton Oilers because of nachos. Yeah, so apparently in the third period, the Caps were up 3-1. And sometime in the first 5 minutes of the period, a fan threw a tray of nachos, you know, a little paper yeah. basket of nachos onto the ice. And Logan Thompson was like trying to point to the officials, hey, that's a hazard. You need to get the nachos off. But
wrong.
No one No one saw him pointing it out, and while he was trying to point it out to the officials, Corey Perry scored on him. And they said, wait, hold on, I was pointing out these nachos and not doing what I should have been doing, the goaltending in the game. That they did end up holding on for the 3-2 win, so it didn't cost them a victory. But the Capitals coach, Spencer Carberry, said that's first. I've never seen nachos on the ice in the National Hockey League, and certainly nachos that play a part in the game. Goalkeeper Logan Thompson said, obviously, I got to play to the whistle. That is on me. Did end up with 30 saves and got the win. But, yeah, nachos on the ice, not good. Not good, Frank.
No, it's not. And did he say what he did? Did he, like, just try to yell for the officials? Because my first thing is you see it every time, like, the penalty's winding down. Goalie smacking the stick on the ice. You don't miss that noise. And you always look over every time.
What's going on? And now the rules state, this is quote, in the event that objects are thrown on the ice that interfere with the progress of the game, the referee shall blow the whistle, stop the play, and the puck shall be faced off at the faceoff spot in the zone nearest to the spot where play is stopped. It's just the nachos weren't interfering with anyone, and the referees had to stop the whistle. He was just trying to get them to, like, stop the game and take the nachos off of the ice. You know, don't throw nachos. Don't throw any nachos. I mean, you know, you paid for the nachos. Why would you throw nachos onto the ice?
I agree, especially with how expensive those nachos are becoming, especially at an NHL arena. How much time did he have, too? I mean, there's a couple of things that
I'm
thinking
exactly
of.
How, yeah.
If he was screaming for them for like 10 seconds, he could have easily just like slid them against the boards. Goalies do that with broken sticks all the time. Like they'll just slide them out of the way.
It was like out, like from the net, because the shot came from Perry, came from near the nachos.
Oh, good. That's another thing. That's another sentence that was never uttered before.
No, yes.
The goal was scored near the nachos.
Yeah, scored near the nachos. All right, finally a little doo-doo this. I like this story.
D-D mega doo-doo.
So we've seen this actually from the Bills Mafia, which is the Buffalo Bills fan club in the past, where, you know, they take up a cause for one of their opponents. And obviously the Bills are going to the AFC Championship game thanks to the heartbreak suffered by Mark Andrews, who not only had a fumble in the second half, but also failed to catch the two-point conversion that would have tied the game and potentially forced overtime in their divisional round matchup against the Baltimore Ravens. Now, Buffalo may have gone down the field, kicked a field goal, and won anyway, but I'm sure Mark Andrews is feeling bad about this one. So the Bills fans have taken up the cause, and Mark Andrews is a big supporter of the Breakthrough T1D charity, which is a foundation that is fighting type 1 diabetes, something that Peter Seidler, I'm looking at a picture of him right now here at Fantasy Camp, he suffered from and donated a lot of his time, energy, and money toward type 1 diabetes. My son suffers from it as well, so I know what a great cause it is. They started a GoFundMe in Mark Andrews' name, and at last count, this was, I think, last night, Bills Mafia has already raised over $32,000 for the Breakthrough T1D charity to help Mark Andrews, who, you know, dropped the two-point conversion, feel a little bit better about the whole thing and how the season ended.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely fantastic. And as a New Yorker, I know that New Yorkers can be very, very charitable when you need to, when they need to be and when they want to be. However, Buffalo basically being Southern Canada, I don't know if I can take full credit for that as a New Yorker.
Well, anyway, I mean, I don't know if it actually makes Mark Andrews feel that better. He's still gonna feel pretty bad that it's the Buffalo Bills who are going on to the AFC Championship. But at
it's
least
the Bills fans
good.
That are doing it too, not the Baltimore
it
fans.
Is.
Like,
know,
hey,
I
we're
know.
Rallying it's... around you. No, it's get away
yeah,
from me.
But thank you again for dropping that pass and letting our team go on instead of your team. And that's Don't and Do This for a Wednesday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, when we come back, I want to tell a little story about something that happened to me yesterday while I was away from Fantasy Camp here in Arizona. Paul and Woods were not there with me, but I will share that. And I think we're going to bring back our conversation with Wally Joyner. If you missed it earlier, got to sit down, had not talked to Wally before on the show. Really great discussion with the former Rookie of the Year, Rookie of the Year runner-up, All-Star, and Padres first baseman from the late 90s. So we'll get to all of that coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. We back, Frankie? Had to run to the restroom there. We are back. Final segment of Ben and Woods here on a Wednesday, live from Padres Fantasy Camp in Peoria, Arizona. So yesterday, I got Frank Marchese back in the studios. Paulie and Woods are out in the fields. After the show, they went out and they had a doubleheader of baseball games, and I had a few hours to kill. So I went out to one of the local golf courses in the area just by myself and said, hey, can you get me out? Sure. They put me out as a single, and I ended up joining a guy from Northern California, and he was a decent player, so we had a good round. We're walking, and eventually, you know, topic comes up. You know, what do you do? I said, well, I'm here, Padres Fantasy Camp. I'm a radio host, so, you know, we're the flagship station. We talk about the games. And he goes, I'm a Dodgers fan, you know, just kind of grew up that way, and I've been a Dodgers fan my whole life. And then unsolicited, I didn't say anything. Unsolicited, he goes, I really don't think what the Dodgers are doing is good for baseball. Like, I didn't say it. I swear to God, Frank, I did not egg him on. I did not bring it up. He simply said on his own volition, as a self-avowed Dodgers fan, he goes, I just don't think what they're doing is good for the game of baseball. I don't want them to just grabbing every free agent and everything like that.
We found a rational Dodger fan. All right.
How about that?
Let's go.
How about that? So, you know what? They are out there. They do exist. And they do recognize that, you know, maybe even though it's good for their particular team and winning another World Series or having a better chance at winning another World Series, that overall for the competition, for the rest of the fan bases in Major League Baseball, that spending, you know, more than double most other teams in baseball is not a sustainable, successful business model for the sport.
It's almost like that guy should be given a job as a national writer.
I said, well, I mean, it's weird how many people don't, you know, you're a Dodgers fan. I'd excuse you just being through the moon with all the signings. Just celebrate it. You enjoy it as a fan. You get this kind of experience so rarely, usually. But no, he was like, no, I don't think this is the right thing. So Ken, appreciate your honesty and candor yesterday during our round of golf. And he also, he inspired me. I played pretty well as shot a 79, so I was pretty happy with my game yesterday. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to check traffic. When we come back, we're going to bring back our interview. If you missed it earlier in the show today, Wally Joyner sat down with us at Fantasy Camp. Has not been at Fantasy Camp before, has not been on the Ben and Woods program before. Obviously, you know, great Padres first baseman from the late 90s. We talked a little bit about his Angels days, his coaching days as a hitting coach, both with the Padres and the Detroit Tigers. So Wally Joyner coming up next here with Ben and Woods on The Fan. He took baseball by storm in 1986 when the Big A in Anaheim became Wally World after the Vacation movie. And he was, I think, runner-up to Jose Canseco in Rookie of the Year. He was the starting all-star first baseman for the American League in 1986 as well. Of course, went on to play for the San Diego Padres later in his career, became a hitting coach for the Padres and the Detroit Tigers. In his career as well as a coach, and now he is here at Padres Fantasy Camp. He is joining us right now, picking up the microphone. It is our pleasure to welcome to Ben and Woods, the great Wally Joyner is with us here.
Thank you, guys. 97.3
The Fan. Wally, it is nice to meet you in person. Good to see you, and
thank you.
Welcome to Fantasy Camp.
I appreciate that.
How you doing?
I'm a little sore.
Yeah. I mean, imagine how we're feeling.
Third day in camp, you got to get a little sore.
Yeah. Man, you had such a great career.
Thank you.
I remember being a kid and playing baseball in high school, and they had me at third, and they realized, probably not the best spot for him. Let's move him over to first. And I didn't have a first baseman's mitt, so I went and bought one, and it was a Wally Joyner model. And I remember it to this day. I remember looking down in there going, oh, hell yeah, that's a Wally Joyner. I remember your rookie card with the Topps rookie card with the little trophy off to the side, you know, had it forever. And it's just wild to see you here in person, knowing, you know, I spit into your glove 7,000 times when I was a kid.
Yes,
man.
Sir.
It was great. Tell us about I'm reading this, and did somebody really throw a knife at you when you were playing? Is that a true story?
I don't. I think it was just an angry Yankee fan.
Yeah.
That just heaved it out.
A knife.
Yeah.
an actual knife.
We had a two-game series with the Yankees. Mike Witt threw a complete game. We got the last out in Yankee Stadium. We were on the mound congratulating him, and everybody, and I had just high-fived Mike Witt, and I turned around, and something hit me right in the shoulder.
Yeah.
And I thought it was Mike wanting to say something to me, so I looked back at him, and I said, "What do you need?" And he goes, "What are you talking about?" I said, and then we looked down in the ground, and there was a buck knife with the blade about 5 inches sticking in the ground.
I am speechless right now. That obviously should never happen. Was that a common thing for you in New York, or for you guys when you played in New York?
That was a one and done. You know, the rest of the story was when the Yankees came to Anaheim. Dave Winfield ran out to right field, and he was pelted with rubber knives that "Welcome to Wally World." So. It was pretty good.
Unbelievable, man.
Wally, we just saw Jackson Merrill of the Padres have an incredible rookie season, finished runner-up in the National League Rookie of the Year voting. I thought he should have won it. You did the same with the California Angels in 1986. Tell me about that, the phenomenon of Wally World. Did you know, were you confident going in you were going to have a good season? Because it takes guys sometimes, you know, a couple of years to adapt to Major League pitching and just get comfortable. Why did you feel like you had so much success so early on in your career?
No, I absolutely didn't know. I was an unknown that was playing first after Rod Carew played his career. The Angels made a decision to let him go and went to spring training, had a good spring training, had a great I had a great veteran team to break in with, which I think helped me quite a bit. I had Bobby Gritch at second base, Doug DeSense at third. Bob Boone, one of my best friends, was catching every day. A lot of people didn't care for our manager, Gene Mock. I loved him. I learned a lot from Gene about how to play the game of baseball, which I think was very helpful. George Hendrick, Reggie Jackson, they were both on the team. So I just kept my mouth shut and my eyes open, and I learned a lot that year. Don Sutton was one of our pitchers. So it was a veteran-laden team. I got off to a quick and fast start, and I had a lot of support by these guys, and I think that was very helpful.
Talking to Wally Joyner here on Ben and Woods this morning, and, you're a fantasy camp coach, but after your playing career, you coach a bunch of different teams, many different roles. More frustrating coaching big leaguers or coaching these guys, teaching them how to hit?
Well, I don't know if you know this, but you have to have a little talent.
Right. Okay, yeah, allegedly, right?
Yeah. No, the big leaguers were so much fun. I absolutely enjoyed every day that I had a chance to coach. My last 3 years, I was blessed with being with Brad Ausmus and with the Detroit Tigers, and my job on that team was just to make sure everybody showed up on time. We had Victor Martinez, Miguel Cabrera, Ian Kinsler, J.D. Martinez,
wow.
Nick Castellanos. So I just stayed out of their way.
You just fed the tea.
I did.
You put this here. And
I think the best coaching I gave all of them was to do it again.
Yeah, yeah, right? Do it again.
Just do it again. So 2016 was my last year. It was 30 years in the game, and I've enjoyed my time post-career, post-coaching. But this week has been a lot of fun.
Do you watch much baseball now?
Oh, sure.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, who do you like? When you watch guys hit, anybody that you look at and say, that guy, he's got a little Wally Joyner in him?
Well, I'm fond with, J.D. Martinez broke in. He actually struggled a little bit with Houston Astros,
yeah.
And then we picked him up. And my assistant coach, Darnell Coles, who does and still does a great job, he's with the Washington Nationals. They hit it off. And so I watch JD. I watch Nick Castellanos with the Phillies. I'll watch my Padres. I wish I could watch the Angels. But it's frustrating.
Tough, yeah.
It's tough to watch them. I love them, and I want them to be successful, but, it just seems like they just can't figure it out yet. So hopefully this year will be different.
One step forward, a couple steps back, yeah. With the Angels. We have Angel fans that listen to us,
yeah.
Being in close proximity. And, I think we're in kind of lockstep. You know, I mean, we've had some playoff success and made some runs, and man, they've had some really great players, and it just hasn't seemed to click.
Yeah,
yeah, they've obviously had a lot of tragedy in the organization as well.
Yeah, injuries,
and it's just been one gut punch after another.
You know, you got to give the owner credit for he's gone out and gotten the players, and it just hasn't worked out. Some of the players have had some season-long injuries that puts a big void in that lineup.
Yeah.
But when you have Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani for a number of years, you would hope that you could get to the postseason.
No doubt.
So,
talking to Wally Joyner here at Padres Fantasy Camp, and he came to San Diego a decade into your career, 1996, joined a team playing for Bruce Bochy that was looking for a playoff appearance after a long time, and obviously the 96 season beating out the Dodgers at the end, and the 1998 going to the World Series against the Yankees. What were some of your, one or two of your favorite memories of that era, those years with the San Diego Padres?
Well, I got to say that the fans were incredible. The owners, John Moores, Larry Lucchino, they put a great product on the field, and the fans appreciated it. They came out and they supported us, and I think 96 was a stepping stone to 98. We got some nice pieces put together in 96. We finished off in 98. Kevin Brown and a few more guys that year that kind of solidified our team, and off we go. So, you know, the whole year of 98, we actually still have a 98 thread.
Oh, we've heard.
that is epic.
Yeah.
Nothing is off limits.
Right.
And we love each other. We get together as much as we can. But, you know, I don't know. I mentioned this in a Padre article that one of my memories in 98 was the amazing reaction by the fans after we lost Game 4. And we're all dejected and exhausted. And all of a sudden we hear this noise out in the stadium and nobody left. Everybody started to cheer. And I'll never forget that.
You know, something I remember from that season when you bring up the fans, I was a young man, Padres fan in that season, and I remember going to game 4 of the NLCS against the Braves. You guys are already up 3-0, and it was probably an hour before the game. Braves were out taking batting practice, but the stadium was already almost full, and the fans just started chanting, "Sweep, sweep, sweep." And I looked at the Braves players were looking around going, "What is going on here? This is crazy." Now, they didn't win that game, ended up taking the series in 6, but I still get chills thinking about that moment sitting in Qualcomm Stadium before game 4 of the National League Championship Series.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I played one more year with the Padres in 99, then I was traded to the Braves 2 years after the World Series, and that was one of the first things all the Braves who were on that team said to me was how passionate the fans were, how loud that place was. I mean, when you pack Murph, there's a lot of people, and it gets rocking, and it was so much fun to be a part of that.
Oh, I bet. It's and, you know, San Diego shows, if there's a good product on the field, they will come out and they will be loud. Last year I was at one of the playoff games, and I'd never seen anything like it. And even many of the Dodgers called it the best atmosphere in baseball. And, you know, that's what we want to get back to. And I know you want the same for your Angels as well. I wanted to shift gears just quickly and talk about hitting. It's one of my favorite things to listen to people talk about. Yeah, because I can't hit, Randy, so I want to learn as much about Wally Joyner here. And he's got over 2,000 hits.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I want to hear from him.
I just want you to know it's the early 80s when I met Wally.
Yeah.
And he didn't have hair then.
It's one of my weaknesses, Randy.
It's his look. He's the guy who looked most like the mascot of his own team when he came to be with the Friars.
Ball. I love it.
Randy, there's only so many perfect heads in the world, and I need to show it off, I guess.
Yeah. I love you, man.
So, over the last, you know, there was this weird period in baseball where it was the, you know, three true outcome. It was strikeout, it was walk, it was home run, and guys figured out if I can hit 40 homers, I can make a buttload of money out there doing it. Have you seen in baseball, and I know there's not as many 300 hitters as there used to be. I value them. I think anybody that can get a hit, it's the hardest thing to do in sports. And the more you can get, the better off your chances will be. With some of the rule changes, and are you seeing a little bit of a return to baseball like you guys used to play it?
Yeah, I take hitting very seriously.
Sure.
And I had a lot of fights with executives when I was the hitting coach of the teams I was with. They wanted to really go in a different direction. Launch angle,
yeah.
They picked out different things that they felt were more important.
Sure. What was the most important thing to you as a hitting coach? Barrel, just hit the ball hard, barrel it.
Plate coverage.
Play coverage. Yeah.
Understanding the strike zone.
Yep.
Throughout my career, there were, a lot of hitting coaches I was with. And hitting coaches on the other team and players. We all have different ideas, but one of the things that stuck with me, because I played defense also,
sure.
And I understood how escalated the inning can be when there's men on base.
Yeah.
And so on base percentage, getting on base, pitch count, all of those things are important, but as an individual, I needed to understand what my pitches were that I wanted to look for.
Sure.
If I kept looking for the pitcher's best pitch, I'd walk back to the dugout.
Sure.
Because he's making a lot of money out there.
Yeah.
Because he's got a great pitch that gets you out, right? So I'm trying to get the second or third or fourth pitch that he has to throw to me because it's not his best pitch, and I have a better chance of getting on base and making contact and getting a hit. So it's boring, but get on base.
It's not.
Get on base.
I love it.
And let the next guy, if he gets on base, now there's two guys, nobody out.
Now the defense is puckered. Yeah.
Right? Now the pitcher's puckering.
Yeah.
Now his best pitch of a slider is going to hang a little bit because he's going to tighten up a little bit. So all of these.
That was us with Wally Joyner earlier today. We're kind of wrapping it up here, last couple of minutes here on Ben and Woods on a Wednesday. We'll be back here Thursday and Friday morning. Did have a little baseball news. Tim Anderson, shortstop, just signed a minor league deal with the Los Angeles Angels. Going to play for Ron Washington's team next year. And just had some soccer news as well this morning. And for both of our local teams, breaking news, the San Diego FC getting ready for their first season. Just signed another big international star, Anders Dreyer, from the Danish league. He's going to be their second designated player, along with Chucky Lozano. And the Wave have reportedly traded Naomi Girma, one of their best players, to Chelsea. In a big, like, $1.1 million sale. So Craig and Annie will have more on that coming up next. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks to Frank back in our studio. I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your Wednesday from all of us here at 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.